Okay. So
here we are. Again, it's the second part of the second week. And I've been hearing some grumbling from the crowds about some of these problems. Let's just see what the status of people's problems are. So first question, how many people have got the Jolly Jumper problem working? Okay, so I hear a lot of people. Okay, four people I see. That's good. How many people got any of the other problems working? Anybody else who got any of the other ones working? Okay, I have people still working on Jolly Jumper. Okay, and we're having several people. So what kind of problems are people encountering on our Jolly Jumper problem? Okay, you know, it says here that... so what is the problem here? Is there any kind of problem?
I can tell you what I was... was at the point where, as far as I can tell, I could not come up with a test case where it would fail.
Yeah.
But it wasn't being accepted. And it sounds like... what happened is that the input routine that we were given, you mentioned, go on there.
I see.
It wasn't grabbing enough characters. They give you a parameter in there, they don't say what it is.
Right.
And apparently that's the length of what it would grab.
I see. So you change that from, that's what you changed, was in the IO routine.
Right.
I submitted it to 2.5 and said, well, answer. I was like, maybe that's it. I changed it to a
menu. So the people who had trouble, were they all using Java?
Yes.
Is there any C++ person who had trouble with this one? Is there any C++ person who got it running successfully? That's probably a better question. You did. Okay. How many times did it take you to get it going? Okay. So someone sent me mail about this, and I'll get the this corrected on the judge. Okay. I mean, the standard I.O. template. So you're saying the problem was that it snarfed the line and the line was too... that the line buffer was too small. Okay, send me mail to remind me of that, and I will tell them in the Spanish people will presumably change that once I remind them.
You just got to basically just tell me what the parameters would be, what arguments that meant in case. That's the problem.
Right, but presumably they could change it. I'm sure a million wasn't necessary. You didn't do binary search. Okay, so that's a problem. And so this actually illustrates a problem with Java. One of the reasons why Java has these kind of problems is somehow originally, I gather, Java was designed to somehow be something safe. You could run your programs on your own system. And one way to prevent you from doing damage is to prevent you from having access to write things and write things to files and write things and so a lot of the complexities here are a result of trying to graft that onto Java later is my interpretation. But definitely send me a reminder and so that I can spare people from this in the future. Okay, does everybody understand what the problem seems to have been? Okay, and how to fix it? Okay, if not, any questions? Okay, any other experience on the Jolly Jumper problem? Okay. How long was the program when it actually ran? About 100 lines. Okay. So it should not be a big exercise. I'm sorry about that technical issue. One other thing that you may find, some of these problems on the UVA judge, they do have a bulletin board. Okay, and so did you look at that
one? They're basically questions about clarifying what exactly the Jolly Jumper, whether it's a sequence, whether they actually are a sequence or not, and it's going to do with the error process.
Okay, so, but this is. This is interesting and educational. So now we don't know what this is, and it's frustrating, but it is educational. Any other comments about the Jolly Jumper problem? Okay, one way or another. That was not meant to be hard. Any comments on any of the other problems? Has anybody attempted any of the other problems? Okay, yeah, which ones?
Stack them up,
okay. And this is a problem where we're given a... what you're given in this problem is a basically a card, a set of cards, okay, a set of shuffle operations that you're allowed to do. Okay? And it then specifies which one you apply after another. Okay? And the goal is to tell what the status of the deck of the cards is like after you have done the shuffling. Okay? How many people have tried this one? Anybody succeed or on this one? You've succeeded, okay. Did you succeed recently or in the past?
Recently.
Recently, okay. How many times did it get you to go? Did you?
Twice.
Twice, okay. Okay, how many lines of code roughly? 100, okay. So shouldn't, you know, conceptually be, so what is interesting about this problem, if I interpret it, you have to somehow implement the shuffle operation, and you've got to also be able to read and write the names card, somehow map cards to the form output format that they have in mind. Okay? Is everybody sort of a, how do you both read the problem at least? Okay? So that's sort of, I think, the two interesting parts of it are how do you do one of those shuffle operations? Okay? And how do you print them out? Okay? Any questions or comments on that? Yes. You didn't understand the input format. Okay, so let's take a look at what this is doing. My interpretation, and the people who've thought about this should talk to me or contradict me. The first item is tells you how many input cases there are. So first, the first item at top is a 1 in this particular input example. Tell you there's only going to be 1 problem to solve on this input. In principle, that might be 10, or probably is going to be 10 or 100, how many best cases they give you. Okay? And that's separated by a blank line. Then there is a 2, which here specifies, I gather, the number of decks, the number of different shuffle operations that they have. Right? What? It has what? Yeah. Yes. So these two tell me that, if I remember what the next 2 is, that tells me that the next is going to be 2 shuffle operations, meaning types of shuffles the dealer knows. Okay? Each shuffle is being specified as a permutation of the numbers 1 through 52. Is that right? Okay. And so you now have 2 sets of numbers from 1 to 52. Okay. And then it tells you how you're going to shuffle the deck. Okay. And it says you're going to do the first shuffle followed by the second shuffle on this example. Okay. Exactly right. Exactly right. Exactly right. You can take a card deck and repeat it. Okay? And what the shuffle operation is, it's being specified by a permutation telling you where, and we have to make sure we take a look at it, where each card goes after the operation. So originally we have the deck, the card deck sitting. Let's look at a small operation. Let's say we had a deck of cards of size 8. Okay? So we had, let's say 52. 52 is a large number to write on the board. Let's say we have 8 cards, okay? What would be the shuffle described by the permutation 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? That would be the identity operation, right? Does everybody sort of agree with that? Okay? What would be the shuffle defined by 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 2, 3, 2, 1. What would that permutation give you as a shuffle? Reverse. Okay? What would give you the classic perfect shuffle that you're supposed to do when, you know, anyone who's played cards? Everyone played cards? You take a deck, you split it in half, you go flunk. Okay? What is the flunk shuffle? The perfect shuffle. Yeah?
That would be like 1, 5, 2, 6, 3, 7, 4, 8.
okay, let's try to build that thing here. You say you take the first card, stays where it is. What's the card that's next after it? It should be the first card from the second half of the deck, right? Five. Then it would be two, six, is this right? Three, seven, four, eight. This, I claim, is the perfect shuffle operation. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? And so the perfect shuffle operation is a classic way to make, rearrange cards, but any permutation, okay, is an operation that takes, you know, permutation of permutations is operations. A permutation is something that takes a given array and reorders it. Okay, reorders the elements of it according to that permutation. Okay, you're basically doing this operation of applying permutations as specified. Any questions? Yeah. Right, so let's think what this means now. So let's say we start out with the cards. Let's call them A, B, C, D, E, F. How many is 8? It's 6, G, and H. Okay, let's say that this is in the array locations. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. What happens if I do a perfect shuffle of this deck? What should happen? And correct me if I've got the notation wrong for this particular problem. But my belief is what I'm going to do is say, the first card goes to the first position. After the shuffle that's there, the second element goes to the fifth position. So B goes to here. The third element goes to the second position, C. Okay? The, what do I want to know now? Where is the, that's the fourth element is going to the sixth position. So this is D. Okay, the fifth element is going to the third position, that's E. Okay, the sixth element is going to what, the seventh position? The seventh element is going to the fourth position, and the eighth element is going there. I claim after I shuffled this array, this is what I got. Yes?
I'm not sure, but I think we might be inverting the shuffle on that.
Okay. So let's read this carefully to see if this is the direction which we're doing. I might be inverting the shuffle, but let's see what it says here.
Okay. It says here that we are given a, what you call it? That follows 52. And I in position J means, I see, that the ith card in the deck is moved to position J. Okay, so that actually is an inversion of what I'm doing, I think. Does everybody, how many people agree with me? Okay? So in fact, I have actually, the way I've described it here is a little bit different. I described how I take this to this. Really what you want to do is to take these to that. Okay? So what is, this is clearly what happens if you apply the perfect shuffle. No one is doubting that conceptually there's a perfect shuffle. What you're doubting is that this is the input for the perfect shuffle, correct? That would not be the input permutation for the perfect shuffle. What would the input permutation for the perfect shuffle be for this particular problem?
Okay?
Mine.
Yeah?
Like 1, 26. Well, we're dealing with 8. We're dealing with 8 because somehow 26 is a big number. Okay? But what would I do if I wanted to map it the other way? What does this tell me? 1 goes to 1. Okay?
What you have written down isn't the perfect shuffle.
What I have right now is not the perfect shuffle?
No.
Well, let's think about this for a second. Why is this not a perfect shuffle? What is that? This is not the perfect shuffle permutation?
No, the way you have over there.
You're claiming I have not shuffled this.
Well, you've shuffled it, but not in what I think you mean by the perfect
shuffle. Okay, so what I would expect I would have is A, C, D, E,
No.
Okay, A, E. So let's look at my permutation here and see what I'm doing here. I'm saying that the first element, so look at how you're interpreting this, okay? And what where we're getting confused is whether we're dealing with a permutation or its inverse, because I think the primary way we're getting confused, okay? But here we're saying that 1 goes to 1, so A goes to A. The element in the second position goes to the fifth position, right? This may be a better way to think of it. The second element goes to the fifth position.
Actually, I think it's exactly the reverse of that, isn't it? Because I in position J, so that means like 5 in position 2, means that the shuffle moves the I card, which is 5, to position 2.
Okay.
So it moves it.
Tell you what, why don't we try to work this out for their notation? Okay, let's go back out from scratch and work it out from their notation. Is that agreed? So what is the idea here? They're going to give us a permutation of the numbers 1 through 8. Right? And what is this? Their definition? This permutation is going to tell us an A in the ith position means the shuffle moves the ith card in the deck. So I in position J means that the ith card gets moved to position J. Okay? So what should happen in the perfect shuffle? Okay? I will claim that in the perfect shuffle, the first card gets moved to the first spot, the fifth card gets moved to the second spot, right? Let's put it like that. The second card gets moved to the third spot. The sixth card gets moved to the fourth spot. Right? Everyone agree with that? The third card gets moved to the fifth spot. This card gets moved to the sixth spot. This card gets moved to the seventh spot. This card gets moved to the eighth spot. So we know where each card gets moved, right? Now, what does it actually say here for the operation? It says that we want to know, the result is going to be that an A in position I means that it moves the ith card to position 3. Ith card to J. So everybody, now how do we write this permutation? I'm getting a little confused here.
Did you say A in position I?
Yeah, what it says here is, let's re-put it, how do you love the book? You have to check me, okay? Because this is what we have to get right. Okay? It says here, within each set of integers, an I in position J means that we move the ith card of the deck to J. So what card is going to end up in the first position? The first card, right? Okay. What card is going to end up in the second position?
This card.
Does everyone agree with that? What card is going to end up in the third position? Okay, what card ends up in the fourth position? And in the fifth position? Sixth position, 7. Does everybody agree that this is the permutation as far as the input goes for the perfect shuffle? Somebody's got to convince me that I'm right. Okay, I need to somehow, you have to be a little bit careful here. Okay, but this is what that operation is. Okay? So my question is the following. Suppose, let's say that we okay, so any questions about what this operation is? Okay? And this is a special case of applying a permutation to a permutation. How many people in an algebra class or something like that, have you ever talked about permutations as rearrangement operations? What class did you talk about that in?
AMS 310?
Is that for linear algebra type
of
thing?
No, it's statistics.
Okay. It's sort of an interesting, you know, thinking about this as an algebraic operation, there's some interesting properties to it. One thing that's kind of interesting is suppose, and now we're going to be applying a permutation over and over again. What happens if we did a perfect shuffle over and over again? Okay, why do we do perfect shuffles? Well, to mix up parts. Okay, so that's what you're doing. Your principle, you're applying these things to mix up parts. So suppose we use this as a mix-up operation. How many times will it take me if I apply this permutation over and over again till I get back to my original state? Okay, because you looked at the back of the book?
Okay,
that was 52. Let's take a look at this and let's see how long if we take this thing, how long till it comes back to its original state? Okay? Let's say, just to keep it simple, I hope it's simple, let's try to apply this thing to the numbers. So this is going to tell us that what we're going to do is take this permutation is supposed to tell us that we're taking the value in that spot and moving it to this location, right?
Actually,
the other way around. It's telling me that the fifth card goes here, the second card goes there, right? So what happens here? Suppose I start out with this. The first card stays in its location. The fifth card moves over, which happens to be 5. The second card happens to move, that's 2. Next card, the sixth card happens to move. The third card happens to move. The seventh card happens to move. The fourth card happens to move, and the eighth card happens to move. That's the result of doing one shuffle. Does everybody agree? What if we do another shuffle? What do I now get? Perfect shuffle. Okay? Let me work it out. Why don't you work it out? And I'll work it out and we'll see if we get the same answer. Okay? People get? Okay, does anybody disagree? Let's do another perfect shuffle. Okay, what do we get now? Everybody get after the next shuffle, we get it back to the original state. Does everybody see that? This is kind of an amazing thing. Okay, I thought shuffles were supposed to be used to mix up decks of cards. And now after 1, 2, 3 shuffles on a deck of 8 cards, okay, we get back to our original state. Okay? And I told you, if you look in the book, they have a 52-deck card deck. In fact, 8 perfect shuffles gets you back to where you're going. Okay? Now, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about here. I'm going to give you guys 2 choices. Okay? We can continue to talk about the theory of these shuffles, or we can talk about some programming issues related to these problems. Okay?
don't know if anyone has any references here. Okay?
I do have one question regarding the input on this problem.
Yeah.
What, how would you recommend the best way, because what happened was after you input the type of shuffles, you then given a sequence of numbers indicating which shuffle is done first.
Right.
But would you recommend would be the best way to determine once the you've inputted all of the shuffles that are going to happen?
Well, okay, what's the important point? Okay, so you're saying, how do you know when... So I'm reading in these... So you're saying basically, I know that there's going to be two. I read one, says, okay, there's one input instance. Okay, in general, that could be higher.
Right.
I get a blank line to know that that's the end of that. And I get a two that tells me, okay, you're going to have two decks worth of things. I would now go into loop score I goes from one to 52. And say, read it, stick it, first four I goes from 1 to 2, four I goes from 1 to 52, read it and stick it in the appropriate spot in an array. Right? It's clear I've got to store the shuffles in order to do anything else with them, right? Okay? And then as far as reading the actual shuffles at the end, again, I've got to wait till I get a blank. I'll read 1, read a number, do the shuffle, read a number, do the shuffle, and stop when I hit a blank line.
Correct? That's what I've got to do. And so, you know, because in general, there'll be more than one test case, and that's how I separate the test cases. Okay? Any other questions about this assignment?
I'm sorry, how do you test for a blank line?
How do I test for a blank line? Well, it depends on how you're reading from input.
Again, this point is you have to get your own sort of input paradigm going. What language are you?
C.
C. If I were doing this, okay, I might use a...
There's a function to read a whole line.
That's what? That's scanf? No, that's getS. Is that right? GetS will read an entire line into a string. And then I'm going to use a function called scanS, which is a formatted read statement. Okay? That will let me parse it. Say, get me an integer. And what I would be doing here is
if... When I, in this case, but when we're in the mode where we're reading, we know there's only one number per line, which is the final thing.
My basic operation would be scanf, get s to get the string. Is this string empty? Does it have zero characters in it? Okay. If so, I hit that spot. Okay. And then keep moving. Okay. Any questions? Yeah, questions. Okay, so what you're saying is that, again, one of the things this thing says is that you should need to read,
become familiar with the I/O routines on your favorite programming language.
And one of these things that scanf is, like any of these functions in C, is a function. These functions work by side effects. You have to pass a pointer to the string. That's how it stores the thing. But it's also returning an argument, which, you know, returning a value, and that is the number of tokens on that string.
So one possibility is you scanf the thing with, okay. Yeah. Oh, so you're doing error checking is what you're saying. This is primarily for error checking. Okay, so what he's saying is that if you tried to read two, you know, if you did a scan F,
and it said %D%D, and in fact the line that you were reading had only one integer, which if you had sort of, you stored this as count would be equal to one if in fact it only succeeded in reading one integer.
Okay?
So, this is part of these idiosyncrasies you've got to work your way through.
That's how you get only, if it was only going to enter, I'm sorry, in taking one integer, it would take it zero.
It would have done, set this to some undefined value. I don't know what it means, but it may not change it. Maybe it'll set it to zero, but more likely it may not change it at all. Okay? And so that would be a way of, again, doing some sort of robustness checking if you're worried about that.
here, the, in general, the format, the format specifications are rigid enough that, you know, that I don't think that that's, you have to worry so much with them lying if they're going to give you, about what they're going to give you, okay? But you have to, you know, you have to get, you know, develop your own methodology for reading ends of files and lines, and it's a little, you know, it's a little bit tricky, but, you know, somehow when I do it, when I'm given this job, I look at some other program I wrote that did it, and work from there, because, you know, you have to get all these things working in sync. Any questions? Okay, and there are a finite number of different formats you will see this semester, so once you get through the first couple of weeks, hopefully you won't see too many new hard to parse formats. Okay, any questions? One question about this shuffle one. It looked like they want you to output the cards as names, king of spades, two of clubs. How should you represent each card? Okay, yeah. You represent it as a number from 1 to 52, and you're shuffling it like this. Okay? Anybody else have another idea how to represent it? Yeah. Okay, so you actually are storing, see, you're sort of initializing everything to a, since initially you know what the initial order of the deck is, you're basically having loops that go through 4-1, you know, 1 to 13 for this, the suit values, 4-1, you know, what do you call it, 4, you know, for the value going, for the suit going from 1 to 4 and the value going from 1 to 13. You're initializing the structure to the suit and the face value. The suit is the number. And then physically moving those objects around when you do the shuffling. Okay? Which is better or easier? Okay, yeah.
I found his way to be pretty easy because, it, you know, writing a simple routine, in fact, there's an example in the book on page 36 of doing something very similar to that. Of translation from a number to a suit of cards.
Right.
And that way you can write it once and that way you're just moving numbers around.
So this idea of moving numbers around, okay, and basically converting them to and from what you want afterwards, I find a very, very useful programming technique. Okay, so I'd like to explain this technique a little bit. It's this idea that you know, basically, it's related to sort of hash functions, but it's an idea of determining what I will call ranking and unranking functions. Okay? A ranking function converts an object to a number, and an unranking number converts the number to an object. Okay? And if these things are inverses of each other, okay, namely that S is equal to the unrank of the rank of S. If you have these rank and unrank functions, you can convert between the numbers and S and the objects at will. Okay? And so instead of storing, you know, strings that are the name and the card, not value, you could, you know, what you call it? Just deal with the, you know, what you call it? Just deal with the rank and unrank versions. Okay? Now, why might this be better for the case of cards? What can we do with ranking and unranking functions, okay? So with cards, there's 52 playing cards. Really, we're going to naturally assign each number of cards from 1, a number from 1 to 52, okay? I use these in other contexts for ranking permutations. They're n factorial permutations. If I want to manipulate permutations for small n, because n factorial gets big fast, I might be better off ranking the numbers, working with the numbers 1 to n factorial, than storing an array of things. Okay? Or subsets. There are 2 to the n subsets of n items. I can map them back and forth to numbers, and sometimes it's easier to manipulate the numbers than it is to manipulate sort of an array of objects. Okay? What can I do with these ranking and unranking functions? Okay? Suppose, let's say, I wanted to
generate all the objects. I wanted to print out the complete deck. Okay? Well, now it's just four I goes from one to N, one to the number of objects, unrank I, you know, print unrank I. Right? And now I've got the object. So it's easy for me to construct them all. Suppose I want to construct a random one. I want to pick a random card. How could you pick a random card? Well, you might say, well, I could randomly pick the suit, and I could randomly pick the value. With a rank or unrank function, it's equivalent to picking a, what's it called? Picking a number from 1 to 52 at random. An integer from 1 to 52, and then unranking it. Okay, so I get that ability to do that relatively easily here. What if I wanted to, let's say, sort the cards by value? Okay, suppose, let's say, this is a poker hand, okay? You know, I don't know how many of you play cards or something, but, you know, some cards are higher valued than other cards. Let's say you're playing war, or one of these games where you win depending upon having the higher value card. How do you compare which card is of higher value? Yeah.
Assuming that you ordered it first by suit and by numbers, so you can't use something, you know, like just directly comparing the numbers. So you have 2, 2, 4, 5 all spades, and then 2, 2, 4, you know. Then you could just use a modulus function.
Right.
And grab the number out of it, and it will say what your rank is.
So basically what I'm going to want to do is to compare two playing cards. I can compare them by comparing the numbers if I ordered, constructed by ranking ordering, from lowest value to highest value. Okay, the higher number means a larger value of card. Does everybody sort of agree with that? Suppose, let's say, you wanted to take this card representation and rank it. It's somewhat clumsy to figure out, is queen higher ranked than jack? You'd have to, in some sense, if you had them represented as strings, that would have to be sort of hard-coded logic, correct? Okay? And this way, in principle, it sort of falls out of the ranking and unranking functions, okay? So these I find to be good tricks here, okay? And how would I construct a ranking and, if you think about what a ranking and unranking function is, it's a hash function without collisions. Okay, I'm hashing a card value, suit and a value to an integer, right? That's what a hash function does. It takes a string or an object or whatever you're giving it, and it converts it to an integer. What a hash function is, what a ranking function is a hash function designed so that every object gets a different number. So there's no collisions. So that given the number, I can go back and reverse the mapping, okay, and figure out what the you know, what the card was. Any questions about that? Okay, yeah.
I don't know about number languages, but in Java, dates are currently represented as a long that is a number of milliseconds since a certain day in 1970.
Yeah.
Do you consider that a ranking and unranking function also?
So Java, okay, I said this, so Java ranks says time. Describes time, or any date and time, as a mapping basically between, an integer and a time. So every millisecond since 1970 is represented by a distinct number. Does anyone know why 1970 was chosen? Okay. It was probably the birth of Unix. You want to know the truth, okay? That was, I think, that's how the Unix clock works, and they started in 1970. Unix was like a year or so later, okay? And that's actually why when you do, you know, the year 2000 problem happened in the year 2000. When is the Java clock going to start doing funny things? Yeah, it will do funny things when the number of milliseconds exceeds that of the number of bits in the computer that's running it on. So in like a 32-bit machine, that's like 2036. Okay, so there will be some issues then. Okay, but or people will just switch to 64-bit computers and that'll push it on for a while. Okay, but this is that's a good example there. So now, why is it useful to do that? Okay, this is a very good example. Why is it useful to represent times as floating point numbers? as real numbers that represent the number of milliseconds since 1970. Suppose you want to figure out whether two dates are similar. Which happens first? March 13, 2001, or February 28, 1979? Which one came first?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more difficult using this kind of system because you have to look, first of all, look at the year. That's not working.
Right.
Versus just checking.
You have to first check the year, then you have to check the date, which are numbers, which are okay. But then you've got to check these strings. Yeah. That February has to be before March. That's something that requires ad hoc logic. Okay?
Versus just checking a number.
Versus just checking is one number bigger than another number. Okay? So this is why converting dates and times, this mapping, one-to-one mapping between milliseconds and long integers, is a very nice thing. That is an example of this ranking and unranking stuff. Okay? Any questions? Okay? And a good example of that,
the code that I showed you in the book for ranking and unranking cards, it's kind of interesting. Okay, so here's how I would have done it. So the map between, in my particular thing, between cards, card values, there's 52 types of cards. The face of a card, number on a card, goes from 2 to ace, with ace being the highest and 2 being the lowest. Okay? The suits here I have as ordered as club, diamonds, hearts, and spades. That happens to be alphabetical order. I'm not enough of a card player to know if that's the order for breaking ties. Can anything think the perfect? It is, okay? So in other words, a spade beats a club. Okay? So this is a useful thing. So why is that useful? I'm now going to show you how I'm going to take a card and map it to a, so here I'm given a card, okay? And I'd like to, ranking it means taking a card and mapping it to a number, okay? My cards here are, specified by a value, character, and a suit character. Okay? So what am I going to be doing? For each one of the values of my card, I'm going to do a linear search through the array of values, saying, is the value of the ith value in my array, how does that compare to the value that I was being passed? Okay? Once that is, I know I have now mapped the input character to its rank in the list of possible characters. So if you give me a two of clubs, this is going to tell me that I equals to be zero is where it matched the two. If you gave me an ace, it matched the 12. So I tells me what is the character in the values array that match the value of I in the characters array. Then I do a similar thing to find what is the suit that matches. Okay? And for each one of these, I then say, well, what is a number between I say 0 and 51. I say there's four suits. I'm going to have for every value, okay, I'm going to multiply my value times four, so that the numbers from 0 to 3 are going to represent the 2s, from 4 to 7 are going to represent the 3s, from 8 till 11 represent the 4s, and then I add the rank of the suit, okay, to help distinguish this. Okay, does everybody see what's happening here? Okay. I'm mapping, somehow
the way I'm mapping from the numbers 0 to 51, 0 through 3 are going to be the two cards. The next four elements are going to be the three cards. Okay. And here I rank them. This is going to be the two of clubs, diamonds, hearts, spades. Clubs, diamonds, hearts, spades. Okay. And I have a direct mapping between 0 and 50 in the cards and the number 0 to 51. Any questions here? Okay. If there's any questions, don't be afraid to ask. Yes. I'm mapping, here I'm taking my argument for this rank card is I take a suit and a value character, which could be that you're two strings. You were using strings, right? Here I'm assuming my, I'm just, they're described by single characters. Okay? I'm finding where is it ranked in this ordering, the ordering of the values of that string. Okay? And then to rank it, I'm leaving number of suits is 4. 4 times the rank in the values, okay? I'm leaving 4 slots here for the 2s, 4 slots for the 3s, 4 slots for the 4s, okay? And then depending upon the value in the slot mod 4, that's where it's going to tell me the suit of that particular card. So what is rank of 7? What is, if we unrank 7, what is the value of 7 in this scheme? Well, let's think about that. What is the value of 7 in this scheme? 0 through 3 were the 2s. 4 through 7 is the 3s. This was clubs, hearts, diamonds, spades. 7 is going to be the 3 of spades. Okay, does everybody see that? Not yet. Okay, so another possibility would, to map that, so you want to propose to do is to use a hash table class to map them back and forth. Now the problem with hash table class, I'm not a Java person, but I'm imagining the hash function is not guaranteed to be unique. Correct? So, I mean, there's probably a notion of a perfect hash in function, which may or may not be defined in Java. Okay? But there's no guarantee that a hash mapping is mapping them in order. And it's also not guaranteed that the order you specify has any particular meaning. See, what was nice about this order is, if you look at this order, is the bigger card going to have a bigger number? Okay, I claim that the answer is yes, right? What if I reverse the value of these two loops? Okay, I made it J times, let's say, the number of values plus I. What would happen? I'd have all the clubs first, then all the diamonds, then all the... That order wouldn't be as useful, it seems to me. What? Okay, that, well, for this particular problem, maybe it's okay. But in general, that's not as useful. No, for a card class, this I claim is a more useful order. Because you also get the ranking, the values for comparisons. Okay? Any questions here? Yeah?
I think like using a hash table becomes more difficult when you want to do the reverse. Because hash tables aren't efficient at saying, oh, do I have this object in my table? And if so, what's its key?
Right. The other thing that's nice is we want to go map backwards and look over here. How do I find the suit of a card? Well, I know that the suit is going to be, if you think about it, the suits are going to be in my listing. Club, heart, diamond, spade, club, heart, diamond, spade. If I take the card value that I got to unrank the suit, you give me a card, meaning an integer value, okay? I am going to just take it mod the number of suits to get the suit. Okay, that'll give me a number between 0 and 3. Okay, and then, in fact, I'm returning actually the character because I'm looking that up in my character structure, right? This gives me an index from 0 to 3. By saying suits of this, I'm now returning the character corresponding to the right one. Okay? Any questions? And I pulled the statement trick with the values. Okay? Here I take the value is, I take the integer division of this divided by n suits. Okay? This card is going from 0 to 51. If I divide it by 4, this is integer division in C that deletes the fractional part. the numbers 0, 1, 2, and 3 divided by 4 will give me 0. That will map to the 0th element in the array or 2. Okay?
That is clever.
Any questions? Okay? It's an example of a ranking and unranking function. Okay? And it's clever. Okay? It's slick. Okay? Maybe clever. At the very least, I'd say it's kind of slick. Okay? Because I get a certain amount of bang for my buck from this. I get to do a lot of easy things. And I get to think about things now in terms of ranking and unranking. Okay? And that's a useful way to think of the world sometimes. Okay? Any questions? Okay?
I'm trying to think about how to rank poker hands. I'm looking at a lot of problems that you didn't assign.
Okay, on one that I didn't assign, okay, I have here a... Again, which one is this? 282. That's another card problem, so that might be interesting. But I thought you had you want to map poker hands to values. That's sort of what this one is saying. I want to figure out if my poker hand beats your poker hand. Okay? And the problem is in comparing poker hands, you know, there's this notion of a straight flush beats four of a kind, beats a full house, beats a flush, beats a straight, beats a three of a kind, beats two pairs, beats a pair, beats a high card. Okay? How would you implement this kind of logic if you want to compare two poker hands? One you could do is to figure out what is, for any poker hand, which class does it fall in? Okay, I mean, I'm just trying to think, let's say, what are your options here? You could write a function, give it a poker hand, tells you what the dominant species is, and then compare dominant species. But then you also have to compare within a class, right? How do I know one full house is better than another full house? Well, it says it depends upon the value of the three cards. Okay? This is all somewhat complicated to do. To do the comparison seems complicated. One way that might be a good way to do it, I don't know if Scott Stewart is, but one way that would seem like a good way to do it is if you could find a way to map all the poker hands in the world to integers. So that he's got a poker hand, that he's got another poker hand. You know, that you're mapping all the poker hands from one. How many poker hands are there in principle?
Five.
52 choose five, right? Something like that? How much is 52 choose 5? Is that a lot or a little?
That's a lot.
Is it a lot relative to large integers or small integers? I don't know what a lot is. What is 52 choose 5? Okay. If I were to estimate that's 50 times 50 times 50 times 50 times 50, what am I dividing it by? Something like 5 times 4 times 3 times 2 times 1. Is that right? This would be 52 times 51 times... Is that basically what it is? What is 5 factorial in terms of 50? Okay. This is what? This is about 120, so it's about 100.
So 2.6 billion.
Okay. So that would be this divided it by 2. This tells me I've got... 50 times, how many zeros do I have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 zeros. Dividing it by 2, but that's not interesting. And I've got a bunch of 5s, 25. This is 25, this will make 100, 1,000. I end up about on the order of a million-ish. Okay, is a million a large number?
Not really.
Not so large a number. Okay? So if I could rank the poker hands by values, okay, so I convert each poker hand to a number between 1 and 2.6 million, and I had done this in a way that was kept the order maintained, then it would be easy to compare poker hands, right? I might have to be careful for ties, okay, because I think that, although I don't even know, in poker, can you have a tie?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'd have to deal with ties.
Yes, yeah, suits sometimes.
Suits,
One thing that... you wouldn't necessarily even have to go through them all initially, certainly. I mean, you could just figure it out on the fly, come up with, a rank. game, as long as you came up with an algorithm that was guaranteed not to have crossover or crossover only on these guys, then you just figure out the ranking for those two particular hands and compare them.
Okay, so somehow this notion of a ranking and an unranking idea is an interesting idea that lets you do things. It may or may not be useful here, but it's possibly a good way to do it. And it's a question of, can you use it to simple...
Certainly by brute force logic, adding enough if statements, you can get away with that.
Okay, but it could be trouble. Have you done this one? Doesn't matter. Okay, I'm just going to tell you. There's probably a big difference in the number of lines if you do this in a clean way or a dirty way. Okay? Did you actually try this or no? Just looking at it.
I do, thankfully, remember I
played poker. Okay, good. So, any questions about...
So, I would say, how would I be doing this one? I would probably... This thing here, I would probably do with ranking and unranking functions, and then doing these permutation operations. Okay?
And, you know... How do you do the shuffling? How do you do the shuffle? What is the right way to do a shuffle? You're storing the shuffle in a what? In an array, I think. And you're physically moving these things around. It should be the case that with like a zoo loop, you can implement this given shuffle operation, right? You have to get your array indices right, but that's tractable. Any questions? Okay, so this I claim is a tractable problem.
Okay, and you should be able to get that one going.
Any other comments about stack them up? Okay, so we've got jelly jumpers and stack them up.
Actually, yeah. A question about the Yahtzee question.
Yeah, okay, Yahtzee.
Are we supposed to come up with a strategy that would give you the maximum, or are we supposed to do brute force, so to speak? Okay, if you do this will be your maximum. You do this, if you do this way, you'll get your score. Go the other way, you'll get...
Okay, so what is this problem? Let's make sure we understand this problem. If Bob says it, how many people have played the game of Yahtzee before?
Well, a lot of people. Okay, so that's good. Okay.
And is this the game of Yahtzee? Is this faithfully reproduced? Okay. So the thing is that in Yahtzee, you're given five dice. You throw the dice, set of five dice 13 times. Okay? And now you know what your set of dice values are. You have to assign your 13 rolls, 13 sets of dice, which each set of five dice we'll call a roll. This is that your 13 rolls, assign each one a category so as to maximize your score. So for the ones category, it means that given those five dice, you get the points of all the ones that are thrown. Okay? And, is that a good thing? Suppose I give you the hand of... Suppose I give you the hand, you're a 6, 3, 2, 2, 2. Is this a good thing to assign to a ones category?
No.
No, you get 0 points. Is it a good thing to assign to a twos category? Yeah. Well, maybe. Okay, how many points do you get for the twos category?
6.
In the twos category. Okay. Is there another category that this might be better in?
Three of a kind.
For three of a kind,
you get, what you call it? What's three of a kind?
Sum of all the dice.
Yeah, the sum of all the dice, okay? So that's good,
right? That's better, because now you've got 9. Okay, yeah.
But of course, there's all kinds of other complexities. Like maybe that is a really good one for ones if all of the other ones happen to be better for all of their other.
Okay.
So we know all the rolls right off the bat.
So you're given all the rolls, right? And you have to figure out the assignments. Is this how you do it in Yahtzee, by the way? Or do you have to decide what online?
You do it
as you each roll, you have to decide right off the bat where it goes.
Okay. So this is one that said that if you knew what the dice, this, you're going up with a perfect Yahtzee player. In the world where you can predict what dice are going to be coming up, right?
Okay.
So the question really is, how do we do this one? This is, I think, the hardest of the bunch on this example. One way to do it would be what?
Okay. What would be a correct algorithm for doing this?
Okay, yeah. Brute force.
Brute force. Okay. So you try all 30 factorial possible assignments of categories to values, right?
Everyone sort of agree with that? Okay? And then if you did that, you could, you would have to write, I might do this,
I might write a function that scores it for each of these nine categories. I have nine different types of scores. Okay, was it nine or how many do I have there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 13 possibilities.
So it might be that I figure out how to compute the scores under these, you know, under these things. And then try all possible assignments. Okay? So, now what's the problem with that method?
Yeah? Probably not going to finish in the time limit on the server.
It may not finish on the time limit straight away. What is 13 factorial? Is it a large number? Very large number? It's a very large number, but not an ungodly large number. Okay, so it's actually in an interesting limbo land. Probably about, if I think a guess, I'm going to say it's about 100 million or so. What is it? Just calculate.
It looks like it's about 6 billion.
Okay, 100 million, a billion. Okay, you know, okay, 6 billion. 6 billion is a lot, okay? Probably too much to completely do brute force in a dumb way. But there's probably a way that you can speed up your search by being a little bit more clever here, okay? And so this is, I think this is an interesting problem. This might be a brute force problem, or there might be a clever way to see it. You might, for example, how might you be able to reduce your searching? Okay, yeah.
Okay, I would say take a look at the first input, find out which category it fits.
Which categories it will score in.
Right. I would say that whichever pass it gets the most points is better than the other two. Well, I'd say what I would do is find out how much points we get for each branch, go down one branch. The minute...
So again, it's a question of how you organize your search and think about it. Okay, this is, I think, this one, if you do backtracking, is an interesting problem, I think. Is there another, have you done this one? Not yet, okay. I think it might be a backtracking one, which we'll talk about later on in the semester. Okay, if you know about, how do people have done backtracking in some way, or exhaustive search?
Okay, so if you know how to do it, these things are not necessarily hard. But we'll talk more about them later in the semester.
Or there might be some clever observation. There's certainly some pruning you can do. Like, for example, the scoring something as a full house is probably only going to be relevant to the ones that are full houses. Right? You get points for full houses and not for anything else. And it may very well be that, so a lot of these categories... You can figure out whether or not you're going to have anything in that rank. Okay? Like, you have anything that's going to be five of a kind. If not, then that's a category that you really shouldn't be playing with at all. Right? Okay? And if you do have five of a kind, is it clear that that's the best possible thing to do with those dice? Okay? It might be clear that in all possibilities, the five of a kind, you might be able to do some reasoning to say that if you have five dice that are the same, you can never do better than assigning, the lowest such example to that. Okay? Don't know. You have to think these things. You have to do a brute force on all of them, or you have to think it through. Okay? And that's really the game, kind of a game here. Any questions? Okay? Any questions on any of these other problems? If you've got four problems. Jotsi, I think, is the hardest, but probably, in principle, the most interesting. But I would say that the stack 'em up and the, Jolly Jumpers are easy. Which other ones did we, what's the other one that we had here? Crook Kicker. Okay. Has anybody thought about Crook Kicker? Yeah? You got it working? Or anybody else think about it? You tried it didn't work. So what way didn't it work? Well, how'd you know? What happened?
Well, I was trying to look through...
Well, what happened? What did the judge say?
Oh, no, I didn't get up to a point where you could pass example.
Okay. So what is this problem again, the tip kicker? it says is input you're given a collection of dictionary words, and you're given a sentence that uses these things. Okay? Actually, you then for on this dictionary you're given a collection of sentences. And the question is, what is a possible decoding consistent with the assignment here? Okay? So does everybody look at this one? Let's look at the example here. Okay? It's saying that you have the dictionary is Ann, Dick, Jane, plus Spot, Yertle. And it says that the first word of it is BJ, what you call it? BJVG. What are the possible words for BJVG? What? Dick? Jane? Is it Dick, Jane, Pop, and Spot? Okay.
Oh, it can't be Puff.
Can't be Puff. Can it be Puff? No Puff, okay. Why? Because if we did that, then because V and G are different characters, right? Yeah? Can I use regular expressions to solve this? Okay? It's not obvious to me. Well, let's think what that means exactly. One thing that you might be thinking about when you say regular expressions, it seems to me, is that you're probably talking about for each one of the slots in the sentence, you're saying, give me the list of words that satisfy it. Right? So like, for example, we agreed that when it was all the four-letter words modulo puff. What about for three-letter words? Okay? Okay, then it was A and B was the only one to fit. Okay? And so one possibility is that you think of this as this, one of these, followed by one of these, followed by one of those, followed by one of those. One possibility is that you construct all possible sentences of this type, okay? And then check to see whether it's consistent in an alphabet. That may or may not be what you mean by regular expression, okay? But I'm not sure whether that's, you know, whether that's the best way to do it, okay? How would you try to decode this thing, okay? Any ideas how you would go from here? How did you go from here?
I started to construct all possible version tables, like A goes to A, A goes to B, A goes to C, and I shortly realized that that just wasn't pretty easy.
All possible conversion tables. How many conversion tables are there on this alphabet? Well, no. Let's count. Let's take how many different conversions. So you wanted to say your idea is try a mapping. There's numbers from 1 to 26, right? Letters from 1 to 26. You're saying there's a mapping. How many mappings are there of the letters 1 to 26 to one? Letters A to Z to A to Z. In terms of equations, how many are there? Well, it's 26. Is it 26 to the 26?
26 factorial. Yes.
It's 26 to 26 to the 26 is how many strings there are of 26 characters. But that assumes you're allowed to reuse letters, right? In fact, what you really have here is 26 factorial, because on this side is somehow an arrangement of the letters of that, right? So what is 26 factorial? Is 26 factorial big or very big?
Very
big. 26 factorial is bad news. What is it? By your day? Okay. This is hopeless. Okay. So to do all of this, all the possible letter combinations is hopeless. Okay. Yeah. What if I rank the letters? Well, okay. We agree that. Okay. So I don't know if that's on top of this idea or not. Okay. We agree that ranking, going through all the letter assignments is a bad possibility.
Okay, that's not going to work, right? Is there something that might be more reasonable? We say rank the letters. Well, it's not going to be what ranking the letters does right now. Or what do you say?
Yeah.
How might I do? Any ideas how you might do this? Yeah? Okay, let's do it. What? Depth first search. What is it? Is that depth first search the way I use say backtracking? Okay, so what might you do? I might think about what is a partial alphabet I could build. A mapping. Maybe it's going to be mapping the letters from 1, numbers from 1 to 26 to letters from A to Z, right? Okay? So I could indeed either represent the alphabet as numbers from 1 to 26 or from letters from A to Z. So that might be a use of ranking thing. I would probably just manipulate characters from 1, A to Z. And it could be that you'll say, well, let's say I chose the first word here. What was the first word?
For this example. Dick.
No, for the band.
What was? This was right in this particular example. This was and was the only possibility here. Okay, and here was Dick. What were the four letters that they had in the slot?
B, J, B, G.
What does that say? If I assign this to be Dick, what is B equal to? B is equal to D. J is equal to I. So I get some constraints. V is equal to C, and G is equal to K. Okay? Now maybe once I set that, maybe I'll look at the next one. What are the letters that I'm setting here? Okay? What are those letters?
That's XSB.
Is it possible that I've done this right?
Yeah, it is possible.
It is possible. X goes to A. I haven't used X. S goes to N. I haven't used that. And B goes to D. That's what I want it to be, right? So far I haven't had any problems yet. Okay, is that the right answer?
Yeah, it looks like that's the right answer here. Okay?
So by doing a sort of brute force search, look greedily as far as I can, and then backing up, I think I can do this. By doing backtracking or depth first search, whatever you call it. Okay? Yeah.
What would you do, though, if you found an instance where it won't work? Do you have to put everything in and start from scratch?
So if I, suppose I found that after I put down, let's say instead of putting out Dick, I put down Puff or whatever it is. Okay, or whatever, I put out something here. And I found that there was an inconsistency with this. Yes, I've got to back up and erase what is inconsistent with what I have.
Right, but you only have to erase what you just added because that's the only thing that you know is inconsistent.
Yeah, you have to be a little bit careful, but let's say that in principle is something like that. Okay? So this might be a little bit of an exhaustive search one also. Okay? But is there any ways that we should, which word should we start to fill in first for speed, if it was this case? Should we fill in the first column first or the second column here?
You probably want to do the words with the shortest lengths.
Okay, the words with the shortest lengths or the smallest number of possibilities. I say that this is great, this and thing is great business, because I already know what, when I fix the and, that's given me constraints on what those three possibility letters are. I could probably blow away a lot of other options by being inconsistent with that. Okay? Everybody sort of see that? So I would say this is a brute force. Okay? And so that's probably what I would say also. Okay? And I think this one's probably easier than the other ones.
This brute force one I think is easier than the Yahtzee one. But I may be wrong.
Okay? Any questions? So the first, to summarize, again, today is Tuesday. Thursday.
Jolly Jumpers and, stack one seems to be routine now, okay?
Anybody, you know, should be in principle able to get those going. Okay, the other two, we say, oh, I haven't talked about backtracking, blah, blah, blah. Get the first two going, and then before dealing with backtracking. Okay, what time is it now? Is it end of class or coming?
2 minutes left.
Anything productive to do with the next 2 minutes? Okay, next class, we're going to continue on with this. There's going to be a substitute teacher next class. But this is somebody, okay, question, yes. Yes, I know it's going to be. It's going to be a guy named Alexei Smirnov who was is extremely good at programming contest type things. He was a competitor back in Russia and did very well. And the Russians are remarkably good at this. So he, I think, will be need a good perspective here. Any questions? Okay, so good luck. See Alexei on Thursday and see me next class on next week. Okay, thank you.
What? Well, we'll schedule pizza soon. Okay, my life is just getting scheduled.
Do we have to